So, I'd like to discuss a little bit about Ribbis. According to the Smicha program, if you can be an expert in Erevin in five short classes, there's no reason why you can't learn all the entirety of Ribbis in one. So, everyone should go out after this and have a great time posturing left and right. First thing to note, in case anyone asks you, the halachas of Ribbis are not in Chosha Mishpat, where you would think to find them if you ever had an overwhelming desire to open up a sefer and look at this. In fact, we would expect it to be in Choshen Mishpat. Why is it in fact in Yeridei? I'll give you that one. So the Torah himself, the Torah who actually divided these things, explains to us why Ribbis falls out of a different place. The first thing he points out, he makes an important statement, is you have to be Zohir Ma'od Ma'od. Be very, very careful when it comes to Hilchos Ribbis. Why? Well, Tosus makes a comment in Bava Metzia that if you violate the halachas of Ribbis, if you're a lover or malva b'Ribbis, ein lo chayav b'olam haba. To the extent possible, that's something that we try to avoid. So therefore, you have to be very careful when it comes to Ribbis. Ribbis is everywhere. You'll be amazed if you really pay attention to it, how often potentially Ribbis can come up. Ribbis is mentioned three times in the Torah. Each time it teaches us something else. One of the first things we learn about, the Torah tells us, is that you can't do neshech or tarbis. Rashi explains, why is it called the neshech? Because it's like a neshichas nachash, that you go and you, at the beginning, you figure, I borrowed $100, what's 10% interest? So 10% interest is $110, the next year it's $121, and the following year it's $133, etc., etc. All of a sudden, you realize that you're really, really in debt. Guys are getting married going out to the world. This is a good way to make money if you could do it in a mutter way. Right? The neshicha works both ways. It's not good to be nor a borrower, but a lender, if you could pull it off, that would be okay. But that's why it's called neshech. What's this tarbis thing? What's the difference between neshech and tarbis? So the Gemara tells us it's in fact no difference whatsoever. It actually is the exact same thing. That neshech and tarbis are really the same thing. We just added another word that somehow or another that makes it more usher. You get a different lav out of it. But there is no difference. Neshech is tarbis, tarbis is neshech. They're all ribbis and they're all usher, so don't do it. Reb Chaim points out that the reason, really, that that Hilchos Ribbis appears in Yeridei is for the following reason. Anything Mechoshen Mishpat, you can be Mochel. I am sure this has come up, comes up every year probably for a bunch of shiurim, that when it comes to, that if you owe me money, I can be mochel the money. Right? I can talk about lamdus, is it kilo hiskabalti, or is it the ochre, the debt in general, but I can be mochel, whatever it is. You steal from me, if I say I'm mochel, it's a nishken geneva, right? It all becomes mutter, right? That becomes a matana, right? I give if I give you $20, right? That's a matana. It's not geneva that you took and you didn't do anything for it. Right? Only if I didn't want you to take it. It's up to me to decide whether it's geneva or not. If you're mazik, my house. So if I say, don't worry about it, that's it. You don't have to worry about it anymore. Right? I'm oichum. That's it. Fine. Kimli mid rabbi, you're going to get malchus now. It's a good question. But the bottom line is, in terms of any chiyah, when it comes to dinei mamonos, I always have the option of being mochel and getting out of it. This does not apply to ribbis, because ribbis, by definition, is always mechila. By and large, when someone lends someone else money, and that person pays back, even beribbis, the borrower thinks that the lender is doing them a favor. Right? You go to a bank, people are clamoring to get loans. It's not because they're giving out the money for free. Right? They're going to pay ribbis on this. The banks make a nice parnas off of this. But still, it seems there's a great taiva that you're going to lend me money. Right, here I am, I want to start a business. So I need money, I want to buy a house, I need money. Right, so it's general, the person is happy. If you'll give me that loan, I'll pay back with joy. I'll pay back the money that you loan me. So by definition, ribbis is always a case of implicit mechila. Despite the fact that there is implicit mechila, it is still aser. Right? Because by definition, that's what it is. That's why Chaim says you're going to find it in Yeridei, or you're not going to find the Choshen Mishpat, because this is not typical Dinei Mamonos, right? Typical Dinei Mamonos is Bein Adam L'Chavero. When it comes to Ribbis, it's not Bein Adam L'Chavero, but rather it's Bein Adam L'Makom. So that is a major difference between ribbis and all other halachas. So, for example, when you lend out money and the guy says, "I don't mind," right? But, you know, here, keep the change. No, you can't keep the change. Because keeping the change may very well be I loaned you 95 cents, you give me a dollar back, we've got problems. On the other hand, if I lend you $1.05 and you give me a dollar back, that's, if I'm okay with it, that's mutter.
The opposite way, doesn't work verbally. They say, keep the change, I don't mind about 5 cents.
Doesn't matter, right? Because I paid you extra for it. We'll see. I can pay you extra for it. I can take less. I can be mulch on the whole loan if I wanted to. I can't take more. Yes.
Why is that called paying extra for the loan if you don't have change and neither do you care of 95 cents?
Because at the end of the day, I walked out with a dollar for a 95 cents. It's not the rice, as we'll see, but it is a problem with the rabbanim.
Why can't you define it as a matana?
What?
Why can't you define it as a matana?
So we'll see that if you could always define it as a matana, right? Matana means mechir, right? Then we would never, ever have this problem. It's interesting. So... there was definitely a time in our history where the Jews made a nice amount of money being money lenders. Why did they do Arayom Hazeh? Why did they get into that business? Part of the reason they got into business is because the church has to have a lot of the similar dinim that we do, right? They weren't allowed. A guy can borrow from a guy, but you know, guy can borrow from a yid, a ribbis. So that's how we got into the business. They were very machmeh. You should know that there was a point. I think there was at least a century where this happened, where you were not allowed to rent land in England. Why? Because they were using shtick. People were saying, you know, here, I'm going to loan you $1,000 or 1,000 quid, and it's interest-free, but at the same time, I want to rent your land for a dollar for the year, or a few pence, probably more exact. So that is the reason why you got to be very careful. You open up the door on this, and everything happens. Yes? Can't be much later than that.
And talking about like the different like miles of their person, whatever, and it says like lo nashach afilu nafri, and that's like sort of like
it seems to be against the pasuk, right? The pasuk says lo nachri sashich. It's one of these three times it appears. I think this is the Kitetze one. Balkari here. It says lo nachri sashich. It says you can't do neshach. You can't charge ribbis to a Jew. But lo nachri sashich. What does that mean? So the Rambam writes that that's a mitzvah saseh. It's one of the 613 mitzvahs that, in fact, is a mitzvah to charge ribbis to a guy. The Ravid al-Attar is not excited about that, and the Ravid himself says that, no, it's not a mitzvah. Right? It's a rishus, and even that's questionable, because there was some sort of takana out there at some point that you know, just like we don't eat bishul akum, because it's going to lead to mixing with non-Jews, so too, we don't do business with them so much, you don't lend money to them to ribbis. Rabbeinu Tam says, maybe there was a problem with that, but it's not anymore. And Rabbeinu Tam, for a living, was a rabbi and made some money as a money lender as well. He put his money where his mouth was. He definitely believed this psak. But, so that's a machokis. Whether the nochri sashich is a mitzvah. We'll discuss later on, nochrim play a very important role in ribbis. So there is definitely a corpus of, I wouldn't say modern, but not that old, Jewish jurisprudence where we somehow or another avoid potentially suing with the help of our non-Jewish friends. Right? Coming up very shortly would be Mechiras Chametz. Right? We sell the Chametz, right? Arguably this year, there is Heter Mechira. Right? When it comes to Bechor Behema Tahora, right? Again, we sell the pregnant behema prior to giving birth to avoid the issues of Bechoris, right? So it seems that we have these legal loopholes and they all have something in common. Goyim. Right? I'm reminded of Rabbi Tendler once came for Shabbos here and he was giving his tish and as Kedarko Bakodesh was very entertaining and he told the story that he once went to the Kloisenberger. That Rabbi Tendler was involved in putting up all these Grumma things when they first built the Shari Chesed, and now Shari Tzedek, and now they were building San Zlaniato, You know, so they called him in and say what to do. So he started explaining how you do it. I remember his line was, you know, we have these switches, you flip them, nothing happens, Kosh Baruch Hu turns around and the lights go on. You know, all these ways of tricking God. And he said through the entirety of the Koisenberg just kind of sat there staring at him incredulously. And finally, when he was done, he said to him, Zogmir, for was is the Eibishah Gemachta Zayfil Goyim? Now for the rest of you. Tell me, why does God have so many Gentiles in the world? Right, the assumption being that that's what they're for. The doctor says, turn on the lights, I'll turn on the lights. You know, the doctor will walk around, you have an automatic door button. Why am I going through all this shtick? So that's what it seems. So when it comes to getting our malachas done on Shabbos, when it comes to getting rid of our chametz, so the question is, goyim have been so useful, so helpful throughout all of our problems, why not use them for ribbis? And it would seem that it would really be shooting fish in the barrel. It's as easy as it gets. Like, I have $100, I'd like $110 back. You want to borrow it from me. So I go to the guard downstairs, and I say to him, I'd like to lend you $100, and you'll pay me back $110. He says, fine. Then you come to him and say, I want to borrow $100, I'll give you back $110. He says, fine. Right? Mutter or Asr?
Sounds mutter.
Right. Sounds a lot easier than anything else we're going to come up with. Right? That sounds great. I've now put together two transactions. Both transactions are mutter. This should be the easiest way out ever. Right? You know? If I want to... I'm sure there's a lot of goyim out there. If I said, you know, I want 109 back, and he could turn around and say, I want 110 back, they'd be more than happy to help facilitate our transactions. So what's the problem with that? Right? Once we say, well, Sasha, forget that there shouldn't be an issue. I should have gotten two mitzvahs here. I mean, tomorrow's the halacha yomis. So I can only hope. So the answer is that the most difficult part of Hilchos Ribbis is not that easy at all, is trying to figure out what is the transaction. In the event that this was planned in any way, the Shulchan Aruch is very clear that this is also, it's not viewed as two transactions, it's viewed as one transaction. In fact, there are five times in the Torah that the words V'yareisa Melokecha appears. Right? It says it by Lifnei Iver. Right, it says Losir de Bogafarech. There's a few places where it says it. I think there are two of them in Kadosh and three of them in Bahar. I think they all apply between those two parshas. So what's the idea behind the Eresim Alekecha? The Eresim Alekecha means there are certain mitzvahs out there that you're never ever going to be able to convict on. Right, thought crimes. You come to me and you say, you know, I'm looking for a good investment. Right, I think it's going to be very good. So I tell you this company I know is going to go bankrupt. Right, they're working on sustainability, but they're not going to get anywhere. So, for me, that would be a bad idea. Right, so that's what they say. If naive, I shouldn't go and give you that advice. How are you going to convict me? You're going to call me and say you advised to invest in this. I'll turn around and I'll say I thought it was a good idea. How do you know I knew it was a bad idea? Maybe I thought it was a good idea. So you can never convict me on Lif Na'iver, because Lif Na'iver, you need to have my state of mind, and you'll never get my state of mind. Yes, so he says, V'yareisim Elokecha. Because you're never going to be able to get me unless I tell you what I had in mind. Memela, right? You would think that the entire concern I had about violating the Torah is the fact that I'm going to get Malkus or Mammon or something like that. I have no concern. That's why V'yareisim Elokecha, God will get you. Right? So too, by Ribbis is one of the Yerisa Lekechos. And what does Rashi say there? You shouldn't be the type of person who's loaning to a Jew. And Tola Be'akum. You shouldn't turn around and say, I'm not really loaning to him. I'm loaning to the non-Jew. And the non-Jew's going to loan to him. That, in fact, is us. The Torah sees it as one transaction. Therefore, unlike our other legal loopholes, this one doesn't work. Even though it would be a lot simpler than the Heter Iska potentially is. So that's the story with that. As a, by the way, a little lumdus, Malkus for Ribbis. Anybody? What? Yesh b'maisa. What? But nitam l'yeshavam is probably a good answer. Right? That fact that nitam l'tashlumin since you can undo it by giving back the money, we probably don't have malchus as far as it goes. That's the assumption. Okay, ribbis, this is important, comes in three different flavors, right? The first one, most important, is ribbis ketzutza. Ribbis ketzutza is a ribbis that you were kotzeis beforehand. It's derech halva. It's ribbis d'oraisa. Well, the Torah says that you're not allowed to do ribbis. The Torah is talking specifically about the case that you would think that I go to a bank and I open a CD and I give it $100 and in 2 years from now it'll give me $100.38 on the current rates. That is ribbis ketzutza. That's the traditional case. That's asur midaraisa. Then there's a lot of other ribbises that aren't so ketzutza. There's ribbis d'rabbanan, there's avak ribbis, according to some rishonim, there's a fourth level of ribbis. But those are only d'rabbanan, and only d'rabbanan. We follow d'rabbanan as well, don't get me wrong. We think d'rabbanan are important. But however, you'll see that there are several halachic differences, some very important halachic differences. One halachic difference is whether you can get the money back. I go and I borrow money beribis, I pay back beribis, and then when we're all done with this, I go to court and I say, he took ribis me. I want it back. Will Beis Din give it back? Well, that depends. Ribis ketzutzas yotze b'dayon. When it comes to ribis d'oraisa, you can actually get it back. There was a case in the Beis Din a few years back. Two guys, both Jewish, where all of a sudden, when they were lending money to each other back and forth, beribis ketzutza for years they were doing this. No hetariska, no nothing, they were just borrowing with lincha, saying back. At one point, one guy owes the other guy a ton of money, and then so the other guy decides he's going to find religion. So he comes back, and he shows up, and he says, you know, chatasi, avisi, pashati, I agreed to pay ribis, you know, but I want the Beis Din to get all my money back now. So on the one hand, wait a second, that's not so fair. On the other hand, the ribis ketzutza is yosef b'dayanim. So it was a little bit of a tricky case. What the Beis Din actually did at the time is it said, you're right, in Achinami, it's good to see your Baal Tshuva, we're here to help you. We assume you also want to return all the ribis you took from him. I said, therefore, we will do you the favor of taking care of both sides of that, and then we'll just all go back to where we started. But we're very happy to hear that, you know, you now drink Chol Yisrael. Whatever. So that's the first difference. Ribis ketzutza is yotze b'dayanim. Ribis d'rabbanan, the person is not yotze b'dayanim, but the person is strongly encouraged to pay back. Avak ribis is already less than that. Maybe the guy can keep it. In that case, maybe he can even collect it. It's a little unclear. Again, that's where the 3 versus 4 comes in. It's Rambam versus Rashba. How many actual levels of ribis there is. So if you get to those lower levels, there are differences. So that's one big difference. Whether it's Yotze B'dayanim or not, that's obviously a biggie. Next Nafkamina is the Gemara comments, I think this is also quoted in Rashi and the Chumash, that when it comes to ribis, it's not that just the guy who's taking ribis who's over the Aveira. It's also the guy who's paying ribis. And insult to injury. Here I am paying money, I'm getting Aveiras for it. Who needs that? But not only that, but also if Adam signed on a shtar that has ribis in it, they're also over the Aveira. And not only that, but the guy, the lawyer who wrote the shtar, he's also over the Aveira. Right, etc., etc. Everybody involved. If I co-sign a ribis loan, got one for me also. Everybody involved in this has an issur. Now, this is a problem if somebody is an attorney. By definition, particularly if you're a contract attorney, you're going to have to do a certain amount of writing of contracts. And contracts always have some ribis involved in it. You look around. So, for example, there's a concept called sad echad beribis, that I'm agreeing to a contract with may or may not have ribis. Right? Let me give you an example of sad echad beribis, your phone bill, your Con Ed bill. They all say if you don't pay on time, what happens?
Turn
off the radio. No, there's a 1.5% late fee, which kicks in before they evict you, take your children, whatever else happens at that point. First things first. Right? So, again, 1.5%, that's ribis. Right? So that's Con Edison. Are they Jewish? We'll have to discuss that later on. But if you're dealing with Jewish parties, It's inevitable between late fees, etc. You're always going to have some ribbis in it. Rabbi Shaya Greenwald, currently of Yishrei Lev, when he first made Aliyah, so I went to visit him. I said, "No, how's it going here?" He said, "This whole country is one big ribbis Shaya. There's way too many Jews here." So he said, "When you come, you have certain zechuyot." So among his zechuyot were that you get an interest-free loan, interest-free. That sounds like a winner. And then they say, yeah, you know, this is an interest-free loan, assuming you stay in the country for X amount of years, you know, the more. He said, well, what if I don't stay? Said, that'd be 3%, not a big deal. The whole country's a big shy loan.
Rev, what was the example you gave of, like,
Con Ed
and they charge you late fees? What kind of rebate is that?
That's called Sad Echad Beribis. When I get involved with this, there is a chance that I'm going to have, by agreeing to this, that when I sign up for Con Ed and I agree to pay whatever the rules are, there is a possibility I've agreed from the get-go to pay ribbis.
That's the rabbinic?
That's rabbinic. Again, when it comes to Daraisa, it's got to be very, very clear what it is. Right? That's So when it comes to being, when you're a lawyer, again, you're going to draft, you're the sofer, right? You're the sofer, you're the edim, whatever it is you're going to be on this contract, you have a problem if there are two Jews involved. You've got a real issue in terms of ribbis for any of these clauses that are going to be in there. So, assuming we're talking about ribbis d'rabbanan, this idea that everyone's chayav, it's only by ribbis d'oraisa. That's the second difference. So, in the event that I somehow get it down to d'rabbanan, which isn't that hard, as we'll see potentially, then it's not as much of a problem. Then I can be the lawyer. That would be okay. Interesting, a shiloh comes up. We mentioned that you're allowed to lend and borrow ribbis from a non-Jew. What about a mumar? Will we apply mumar dina ka'akum here? Right, because a lot of the people we're dealing with are mumar. Right? People that have just like no relationship whatsoever to the Yiddish guy. There's a three-way machokas. Some people say you can borrow, you can lend them ribbis. Some say you can't borrow, you can't lend them. Some say you can lend them, but you can't borrow them. Borrow from them. So that would be, it's a three-way machokas. We're machmer. We do not rely on mumar dina ka'akum when it comes to that.
Why lend and not borrow?
What?
Why be able to lend them but not borrow from them?
Assuming
that my principle is not to have contact.
Right. So, no, again, it's not really not to have contact with them. It's the idea of whether they're considered a non-Jew or not. It's kind of like we're not going to do you a favor. We're not going to give you extra money for being a mumar. We're not encouraging this. Hey, good news, I'm a mumar. Come to my bank. Right? So that's not the type of thing we're looking to encourage. So that's number two. Number three is a biggie also. Ma'os tzedakah. Ma'os yisomim. There is a heter out there that if somebody is, that if a apotropos is dealing with Ma'os Yisomim, he's ought to invest it in a way where he's going to get ribbis d'rabbanan. Many of the poskim expand this to say all forms of tzedakah. If something's a tzedakah organization, they have a right to accept ribbis d'rabbanan. This is very interesting. It's just, this comes up all the time. Why use student loans? So why you come in and they say what are they charging now for smicha registration?
$950.
She said, I don't have $950. They say, we'll give you a loan. So you walk in and you say, instead of paying you $950 now, it's like the wimpy approach, I will happily pay for two $950s on Tuesday. That you know that I'll pay $1,500 later. So is that ribbis d'oraisa or this ribbis d'rabbanan? So they never gave me any money. Right? Why it doesn't give you any money? They just push off collecting the money.
But if they do give you money.
They do?
Yeah.
What?
Sometimes they'll give you a loan, an actual loan.
They'll charge you something.
I didn't know that.
Right, so again, so let's go back. So assuming that this is the typical case of student loans that I'm familiar with is you sign for the loan. And, you know, they don't actually, I remember when I was at a different university, I used to get student loans. What you would do is you actually go to some window, and they would give you a check for the amount of money. And then you'd walk to the other window, and you'd pay with that. Right? That's what we would actually do. Right? Not in YU. You don't see the money. You just sign the papers and adios, my friend. That's the beginning and the end of it. So, being that there was never really money that transferred hands here, it was more of a forbearance. They're going to hold off on you. So, that's probably midrabbanan. Since it's midrabbanan, right, assuming YU is a tzedakah organization, then that would be mutter. Again, once you get it down to drabbanan, that in fact makes everything all better. So that is a major heter. I remember years ago, YU, for years, when I was signing, they used to say there's a line, and this is being done al pi heteriska. So over the years, people called in and said, what kind of heteriska is this? I remember Rav Shatner always said that if this required heteriska, our heteriska is no good. But we don't require heteriska because we're both tzedakah. It's only drabbanan. And therefore, it's okay. We'll discuss why a heteriska in this case is very difficult to pull off. Yes?
Does a nonprofit organization, by definition, consider
it a tzedakah organization? I don't know if Planned Parenthood is a tzedakah organization. I don't know if Friends of Hamas is a friend. Just because you got a 501c3, I don't think that automatically makes you.
I was more asking like what you meant by like tzedakah organization.
Right, so again, that's a question. But generally, we assume tzedakah falls into two categories, right? One category would be limud haTorah, and the other would be helping aniyim. Now, that's a pretty narrow definition, because according to that, hatzalah is not a tzedakah, and hospitals are not tzedakah, right? And the eruv is not tzedakah, the mikveh is not tzedakah, right? If I would go with that minimalist approach, right? That's the question. So these are the three major differences between Ribbis D'Oraisa and Ribbis D'Rabbanan. Again, the three differences are, number one, whether it's Yotze V'Dayanim, number two, whether everyone besides the Malva and Lova are also over the Aveira, and number three would be this case of a Mo'os El Tzedakah, can they accept the Ribbis or not? What makes something into Ribbis D'Rabbanan? So that's an important question. Once you realize that that's, in many cases, it's all totally of this, you're going to want to get it down to the Rabbanan. The Shulchan Aruch is pretty clear that if I sell shtaros, right, a milvah b'shtaros, that would be the Rabbanan. So what does that mean? So what's a shtar? A shtar is an IOU, right? I owe you a certain amount of money at a certain amount of time. So here I say I have, right, these, we also call these bonds, by the way. Bond, IOU, shtar, all the same. Right? So let's say I have a bond, and the bond is worth $50,000, and it matures on January 1st, 2020. So I don't actually, I need my money before 2020, so I got the villain, my daughters are getting married, I got to get my cash quicker. So what do? So I'll swap it with you. I'll trade you. Right? You've got a $45,000 bond, and that becomes due in 2016. Okay. Okay, are they going seriously now? Yeah, I'm cool with that. So I give you this, and you pay me back with that. Right? I give you a smaller loan, you give me a bigger loan. Is that ribbis? So at most that's ribbis through our button, we assume. That is shtar, that's not considered ribbis. What is ribbis? Cash. Cash is ribbis. What's a case of cash? Well, most people, let's say I want to buy a house. I'm likely not going to show up with a suitcase full of cash. So what am I going to bring instead?
You're going to bring a note from the bank saying you're
independent. Well, what do you call that in English? A check, yes. That's what people want to call it these days. Is a check a shtar? What is a check? What does a check say? Oh, economics majors? Me and Rabbi Cohen, the only economics majors here?
It says pay the receiver, whatever.
Right, so is that a shtar? Right?
It's signed, then it says pay, and it has
a... I could sign the back, you can give it to someone else, right? Right? Sounds like a shtar. Right, so assuming that a check is a shtar, once I'm dealing with checks, that's ribbis b'shtaros, that's drabbanan. That would turn just about everything into drabbanan. Right, with few exceptions, it would be very rare to have ribbis d'oraisa. Rabbi Rabbi Bleich, it's interesting, we'll discuss, has it, he says, well, what's cash?
Why is it different than a check?
So checks, right. Cash is a buyer bond. They can give it to anyone. Bearer bond, sorry. So what's the difference between that? Right, Black says maybe it's Ribis. If I give you four quarters, you give me a dollar. That's Ribis. I don't think he's serious. At least I hope he's not. Right? But the question is, what actually is cash? We've moved well beyond the point where we're giving out the chips of metal. So, according to many of the more modern poskim, I think including Rabbi Willing and Rabbi Schefter, a check knocks it down to Ribis Rabbanan. Rabbi Bleich has a very different understanding of checks. Rabbi Bleich does not think that a check is a shtar. Rabbi Bleich is of the opinion that a check, in fact, is a right for me to go and take your money. Right? I get a check. A check has to be in a very specific piece of paper. And what information is on that paper? Well, there's a routing number and account number. The routing number tells me what bank there is. The account tells me where account it is. Right? By having this piece of paper, I have a right to go stick my hand into your account with the help of the teller and take the money out. Right? It's not that I'm giving you rishus to take my money. It's not that I owe you money. Right? The money is right now. It's not an IOU. Again, it could also have other nafkaminas. You know, if I buy my matzahs with a check, is it shelochem? Right? Some people are mocked not to use a credit card. Because until I pay for it, it's not really mine. So, Sherry Mark, they don't pay with a check either. So I use my pinion on bank coins? If I really want to make sure it's in Shalachem. What?
You can get your house. That's
okay, so you think that the chumra is even for credit cards would be... Kinyan Genevish is the docha kinyan oichud, you're saying. That's what it comes out to. I was called it. What? I'm saying if I didn't pay for it, no. But again, the question is if I haven't gotten the money to you yet, right? Even if I've done a kinyan on it, right? So if the money doesn't count, right? You know, so that's why I think it's fine to pay with credit card. But the question of what is cash, what is not cash, it gets to be a little bit of a tricky question. The bottom line is that Rabbi Willig and Rabbi Schaff, again, as far as I know, consider checks to be cases of ribbis of shtaros, and that makes it ribbis de rabbanon. Once it's ribbis de rabbanon, so again, it makes being a lawyer a much easier job, because it doesn't matter who the parties are, etc. At the end of the day, it's all okay. Within ribbis de rabbanon, there are many, many cases. Some of them, on a personal level, get a little tricky. So, for example, there's something called saw b'saw. Saw b'saw, I think they learned about in seminaries, around half of it. Right? Every so often, my wife will go to a new neighbor and say, can I borrow a cup of sugar? And they'll say, no. So, unless they're from Sodom, it's usually for the following reason. Right? The usual reason is because, you know, if you borrow and we give back a cup of sugar, you know, that's ribbis. So I always tell them, okay, I understand. Can I just have it as a gift? And I won't pay you back? Okay. I have no intention of ever paying you back. Don't worry. I won't even be friendly after this. So, what's Sabasaw? Sabasaw is as follows, and the underlying rules of Sabasaw happen to be very important. Sabasaw, basically, what we borrow is money. We borrow money, we return money. Therefore, if the value of the item that we return is different has to be more than the value of the item that we took, that is a problem of ribbis. Everything in the eyes of halacha gets converted to cash. So, if I go out right and I borrow a dozen eggs, and the cost of a dozen eggs now is $1.79, and I return it next week when the eggs are $1.99, so that's just 11% ribbis. Right? We don't care about eggs. We care about the value of eggs.
Where is that you derive from? That basically we borrow less cash?
So, if you open up your bar mitzvah at some point, there is a parak called parak hazav. There's a machok that, what is parak hazav? Parak hazav kon es hakesef. there's only one thing that could be the money. So is it gold? Is it silver? Because they don't necessarily fluctuate together. So that's what the Gemara says, in the Bavli at least. It says, Hazav, Kones, and Kesef, that they follow the gold standard. The Yerushalmi, not so much, right? If you open up that same Perek in the Yerushalmi, it's called Perek HaKesef, right? Right? So it's like, you know, it's like second place. It's only the silver, right? Right? Bavli wins, right? The idea being that the Gemara has this idea that there is a certain basic money. Now, this is very important for a lot of reasons. You find yourself in Eretz Yisrael, a guy asks to borrow $5. What does he pay back?
Well, he has to pay back a dollar. I think he should pay back balance, but it's not really.
Why do you stipulate pay you by cash? I want American cash back, but even American cash.
So that's Rivas. That's why not.
Why? Right. If you give him $5, you say,
So right now, when I lend you the $5, it's 20 shekel. When you give it back, it's 21 shekel, right? As you know, the dollar is very strong.
Yeah.
Other currencies are dropping. So I loaned you 20 shekels, and you gave me 21 shekels. I'm making it samud la dollar, and I'm actually giving ribis. So can you lend dollars in Israel and expect dollars back?
You don't go by technically what he gave as opposed to what the value is?
Well, that's the idea of sabasah, right? That's what I said. If I give you eggs and I want eggs back, right? That's a problem. So too, if I gave you dollars, I want dollars back. Right? That's the same idea. This idea of sabasah isn't just limited to seminary girls who become housewives, but in fact, really, the true application of this is much, much broader. Right? The Gemara is not really after them. Right? That's not who we're aiming to for these laws of sabasah, because the Gemara has a bunch of heterim when it comes to sabasah. One is yeshlo. The other is yotzah hashar. What's Yeshlo? If I have eggs, and I'm borrowing eggs, I couldn't give it back to you right away, right? Then it's not a problem. Also, Yotzosha, if there's a standard price, right? Lachokas, we show exactly what does it mean, but if there's a standard price when it comes to what the eggs cost, it's not going to really change that much, right? That the change is going to be de minimis, so again, we are making on that case. If you're dealing in big business, though, this becomes a problem. So, for example, shorting stocks. Do you know what that is?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Okay, so it's as follows. Everyone knows how to make money in the stock market if you think the stocks are going to go up, right? I go and I buy the stock. I buy low and I sell high. But what if I see that this company's going right down the other way, right? How do I make money on that? So I decide that that's it. I know that stock in McDonald's is going down. That's it, because of the great Baal Tshuva movement. No one's ever making McDonald's again, right? So therefore, I want to make money. So it's $50 a share. And it's going to be in $20 a share in 2 years from now. I know it.
So I borrow someone else's stock. Sell it.
Right, so what I do is I short the stock. That means is I borrow stock from you. I borrow 100 shares from you, right? That costs me $5,000. Right. I just borrow it. I sell. I get the money. 2 years from now, I give you your stock back. I give you 100 shares, but now I'm only giving you back $2,000. That's called shorting a stock, and you make money if it goes down, and you lose money if it goes up. Right? That is probably a potentially real case of saw b'saw. Right? Because I'm borrowing. It's not that I need the stock for anything. Right? I'm borrowing it specifically because I want to pay less. Now, what if I'm right? What if, in fact, the McDonald's goes down? Was I over in Avera? No? Anyone thinking? But by the way, if things turn out that the tzadok never happened. What? Right, but Lamai said, I never did an Aveira, because I borrowed $5,000, I gave back $2,000, I gave you less. I only am over if I lose money. It's like any insult to injury. Right? If the stock goes up, I lose it, and I get the Aveira. It's the opposite of gambling. Gambling is only also if you win. Right? Right? As opposed to shorting stocks. To the extent that there's an issue, there's only an issue if it goes the other way. So the same way that people short stocks, people will do the same thing with commodities. Right? I think that it's going to be a very big coffee crop this year. If you have a big coffee crop, that means there'll be more supply. More supply with a standard demand will lower the price. Therefore, I'm going to sell. Right? But this is even more than stocks. So, for example, a lot of people want to buy things that I don't have. Like, Marshall, I own an airline. Okay? And one of the major costs I have in an airline is the cost of fuel. Right? The fuel goes up, the fuel goes down. Right? I'm selling tickets now for my planes for 3 months from now, but I don't know what to charge because I don't know where the fuel's going to be. So what I do is I buy futures. Right? I buy the right to gallons of fuel in 3 months from now. Sure? And what am I going to do in 3 months from now when it becomes due? I will take delivery. Right? I will be happy to take the fuel because I know what the price is going to be, and that's it. Now, the seller could be one of two people. Right? The seller could be a person who, Taka, makes fuel. Right? I'm willing to lock in. Right? I want the money now. Right? I want to know how much money I'm going to make. One way or the other, I want you as a customer. We set the price now. The second possibility is I don't have any fuel. But I'm betting that you're paying too much for it. So in 3 months from now, I'll buy fuel and I'll send it to you. So that's really what Sagasaw is for. It's for that guy. Because that guy is trying to pull off ribbons. I'm trying to take the money and give back less. But if I mess up, I'm going to give back more. Right? That's why the halachas like Yeshua or Yotza Ashar, they make a lot of sense. Yeshua means I'm the guy who has the oil. I'm taking the money now and I'm going to pay back. But this isn't a matter of I'm trying to make money on this. Right? I'm not trying to capitalize on the time value of money or anything else. Right? So that's really the case where this is talking about when it comes to Saw B'Saw. Right? The Saw B'Saw is talking about a case where I am selling something that I don't have, gambling on which way it's going to go, trying to make the money off of that. Other drabbanos are called Psikta and Psika and Tarasha. Yes?
Explain the
second thing. What? Yotza Hashar, again, it's a machokas Rishonim, but the idea is if there's something that has a standard price that really doesn't fluctuate, so again, you're not going to do this and that. Like no one's gonna buy.
Why would it be a problem if the price of eggs doesn't change? So
then right, so that's why it's a heter.
Okay.
Right, exactly, correct.
You're saying it's not a heter on this one. It's not gonna be a heter.
No, again, I'm allowed to borrow this item and return the item because it's not gonna happen. That's by and large. Are you going? You're confused? Okay. Okay. Good. So that is the idea of Saw B'Saw. Besides Saw B'Saw, there's also something called Psik and Trusha, right? That's what's known as prepayment and late payment charges. Prepayment discounts and late payment charges. Sometimes in business, you will find that you have a bill, and if you pay your bill early, you get a discount. Right? They'll say that if you pay the bill within a week, you get 2% off. And then afterwards, you owe this the regular amount. Or it's the reverse. We said the Con Ed case. The Con Ed case is where I charge you a certain amount, but if you're late, I'm going to charge you more. Right? Those are really, they're both two ends. They're both kind of the same. Right? In both cases, I'm charging you for what? The time value of money. Right? There's something called the time value of money. The time value of money means that my dollar today is going to be worth less tomorrow, assuming we're not in deflation. Right? And therefore, if you're going to take the dollar today, you're going to give it back tomorrow, I'm going to be looking for more money tomorrow to make up for the fact that I didn't have it today. Right? Because it's going to be worth less. I could invest it. There's a lot I can do with it in that time. So, if I'm specific in saying, if you pay, give me the money early, I'll give you a discount, that's ribbis. Darabanan. Right? The fact is that I'm giving you money off for letting me have money for a certain amount of time. That would be similarly, if I say, if you don't give it by a certain time, then it becomes a loan and you owe me this extra money. That also would potentially be ribbis. So let's throw out a case. Magazine subscriptions. In general, if I go to the newsstand and I buy, what do people buy? Which magazine still exists? Is there still a Time magazine?
It is.
What? Mishpacha. Oh. So for that my business week. And what? Okay, it costs I think $4 an issue. And if you buy 50 issues at a time, they charge you like $3 for the whole thing. You get, right? You go online, you can get a subscription for $10, $20, whatever it is, right? You get a tremendous discount for paying up front. Right? Is that a problem of Ribis? So Bloomberg Business Week. Bloomberg's a member of the tribe. So what would you say? Is that do I have to buy it every week at the newsstand, or am I allowed to buy a subscription, even though that Michael Bloomberg is going to give me a nice discount for that?
Not the same thing.
Why not?
I'm buying two different, because I'm buying 20 magazines versus buying.
So you're saying it's a bulk discount?
I mean, well, I'm trying to term it as. It's like buying apples versus oranges. I'm not buying the same
thing. No, it's like buying one apple or a lot of apples, I think. Right? I don't think the magazines change. You get more good news, more bad news. I think it's all the same.
So it shouldn't be.
Why would you think it's apples and oranges?
How did
it go citrus all of a sudden on us?
It's not exactly like that, but it's not. I'm not saying I'm buying. It's kind of like a semantics issue. I mean, I'm not buying 20 different individual magazines in advance for a low price. I'm buying a whole picture. I don't know if it's...
So why isn't that a bulk discount? What else?
Okay, bulk discount.
Okay, but how much of a bulk discount do you get? That's a question. Sir Rabbi Levine, although Hashem was very fond of saying, that's different. Michael Bloomberg does not need my $10 now, and he'll give me $200 for it later. That's not what's going on when it comes to subscriptions. Right? Baruch Hashem, he can put up his own $10. He doesn't need to give me how much more percent would that be? 20,000% a year interest on it. He probably can get funded in a simpler way, but rather, the way magazines make money is through advertising. And the way you sell advertising is by turning around and saying, aha, you know, that we have a certain amount of readers guaranteed every single week. No matter what, guaranteed there's 50,000, 100,000 people that are going to get the magazine, they're going to see your ad. So the real value of subscribers is not that they're paying for the magazine, but because you have a subscriber, anyone else, there's no guarantee they're going to buy it, they're not going to buy it, they usually buy it. When it comes to subscribers, it's a guarantee. They already paid us for it, we're going to put it in the mail, they're going to read it. So therefore, they're not giving you the discount for that reason, but rather it's tolo b'davar acher. There's another reason for it, and based on that, there's room to be makel. Yes?
You have the same thing where you need to know in advance if you're coming or not.
How about why you every single Shabbos?
Yeah.
Right? So again, the assumption is that it's not that why you wants extra money, but rather it's a matter of that it costs more. You know, if at the last second we have to shift a few more chickens, you know, it's gonna be more expensive than be able to do it beforehand. Right? So they want to be as exact as possible, else they're going to have leftovers, they're going to run short. So again, that would be the same idea, that if there's a reason why we're doing it, it's not that, right? It's the advertisers, it's the shechting of the chickens and the calf. Whatever it is, that would be a potential reason to be made. Some people point out, well, what about like tradition in the RJJ Journal? I think the RJJ Journal is $5 an issue. If you buy a subscription of two, it's $8. So who advertises in the RJJ Journal? No one. So what's the deal with that? Would that be usher? It's called the Journal of Knepper Halacha. How could it possibly be usher? I think, again, Rabbi Levine was fond of saying that's then I can get a discount. Because they'll give you a discount because, you know, they want to lock you in. They want to know how many to print. They want to know who's going to buy it. Right, just financially, it's more worthwhile for them to do this. So, you know, every so often, like tradition. If I was buying it every week, you know, or every 6 months when it comes out, or every quarter, I would, you know, go to the newsstand, see who wrote. You know, maybe yes, maybe no. was the David de Sella Pool one. I would have just left it there. But once you're a subscriber, you're a sucker. You've got to take them all. Right? They're guaranteed that they're all going to move. Right? So that would be the idea, that as long as you have another reason for it, you could be make them. But again, it's what's very difficult in these cases is figuring out what's the right price. Right? Let's say I get a shipment, right, of items, and the shipment says, you know, this is the price within 14 days, and this is the price after 14 days. That's all what it says. So how do I know which is the right one? Is the first price the right price, and if I pay later, that is a fine? Or is the second price the right price, and the first price is his discount? It's a little tricky to figure out sometimes, and you really got to figure it out, because no matter how you slice it, one is mutter and one is aser. So, in the event that someone is involved in a contract like this, there should try to be some clarity as to what is being offered by the people involved. Is it that there is a certain amount that is due at a certain time, and you will be punished if you don't pay it on time? Or no, you've got time, but we'd appreciate it, and we would show our appreciation if the money came earlier for our cash flow.
So the difference between, say, a just kosher where you can get club price or whatever, the difference is because theoretically you just spend the card all right away, and that's why it's soon off.
That's what they say, but I don't even think you need that. I mean, I think the idea being that you're locked in now. Once you join the club, right, so it's like you got the red pill and the blue pill, you take the wrong one, you can never get out. they've got your money, and even if all of a sudden, you know, Danishes go up to $16, you're stuck buying them because you have just credit there. Right? Right? It's not just a matter of cash flow. There's a lot more they gain by getting you in. Right. I mean, we have in schools, they sell something, very few schools do this, but Breuer still does this. They have script. Right? There's a certain amount of $8,000 of script you have to buy every year. What is script? It's gift cards that you use in ShopRite, and Kifu, wherever you use it. Why are they so insistent on me buying this from them? Because for every dollar, they get 5 cents off, right? So they pay they buy $100 gift cards for $95. Then they sell them to me, and that's how they make money. So why does ShopRite sell their gift cards at a discount?
Because
they'll
sell more.
Right, because a few things. One is I might lose it, right? That's $95 in their pocket, right? If I lose it, right? And now when it comes to shopping, I got to shop there. Because I can't go into Kifu with my ShopRite gift card. It's just not going to work. Right? So again, there are reasons why you give a discount. You got to, oftentimes, a giveaway is the size of the discount. Right? If the size of the discount somehow falls within what's reasonable for interest rates, you know, then you got to be careful. If it's just ridiculous, right? There's no way that Michael Bloomberg would be borrowing money from me at 20,000% interest. Right? Clearly, there's something else going on here. I think there are a lot of people that are makel in that case. I think there is definitely room to be makel in that case as well. But one's got to be careful with this, particularly when it comes to different pricing by when you pay. You end up with issues there as well. I'll just yes.
Who says it's determined by their kabbalah?
Well, again, how else are you going to determine it? What are my other choices? But again, there's a lot of difference because one's called psika and one's called trasha. So it was just the same thing. Right? So the Gemara says there are certain cases where you're going to pay early, and certain cases, right? It's clear. You know, I buy my gas and electric from Con Ed. I pay a certain amount per kilowatt hour. Right? I get a bill at the end, and I got a month to pay it. And if I don't pay it by that month, right, they hit me 1.5%. That's clearly not a discount for paying on time. Right? So again, you basically, that's what you've got to figure out. Right? I don't think they might do better by calling it a discount. I was once doing some academic work outside of YU, and they had this great move. They said, anyone who gets their grades in on time gets $15 per class. Now, I turned around and I said, we should do that in YU. I am running after Rebbeim for months, they should get their grades in. $15, that's all it costs? Let's do it. Let's offer it to them. So why you said no? We pay them to give it in on time. Maisa. But the move is, what you do is as follows. You take $15 off their salary, and then you say, we're going to give it to you $15 if you get in on time. Right? Instead of saying, we're going to take away $15 if you don't, right? It's all the same. It's all a matter of marketing. Right? So they're both, you know, two sides of the same coin. Just if you put it the right way, you know, if you send out an email from the president with the words, good news in front of it, you know, you think it could be anything. So that's basically what this comes down to. So again, it's hard. It's, I mean, you've got to go kind of with the kavana, like in the Con Ed case. I think that's the only really option you have. A person might be tempted at this point to say, why am I ever lending money to anybody? So it's a mitzvah. Let's keep that in mind. In Kesef, it's one of those ims that isn't an im, that this is a mitzvah. People should lend money, preferably with not ribbis. That would be the way to go. That's what we would try to do. That being said, unfortunately or fortunately, whatever it is, there, not every person who's borrowing money is an ani. In fact, Bisman has said, it's rare that there is an ani who's borrowing money, because who would ever give a loan to a poor person? By definition, banks only give loans to people who have money. Right? If I want to get a mortgage, they're going to say, no, you have money? Right? Are you making money? If I'm not, they're not going to give me a mortgage. Right? So therefore, that being said, so I want to go and I want to, I just thought I'd like to buy a building in the midtown Manhattan. I need a few $100 million to do this, and I think I can make money. That's my plan. So I go and I go to the bank. I want a loan. Right? If I turn to them and say, but I have no intention of paying ribbis, they probably won't go for this. Right, in all likelihood, they'll turn around, they'll say, that's not how it works here, that's not how we make our money, right? And in fact, they're right. I'm going to go and invest this money, I'm going to make money out of it. So why shouldn't they be getting a cut of this? If I'm a poor person in Nebuch, I need to pay the yeshiva tuition, I need to pay for the heat, I need to pay for the food. Okay, mainly, you understand, it's a chesed, I'm willing to take, I give a handout, I'll give a free loan also. It's just another form of a handout. But this guy, he's got more money than I do. He's a multi-zillionaire. Why should he be making all the money and not me? So this is really what led to the invention of the heter iska. The heter iska is not like selling your chametz. It's even less accepted than that. It's close with heter mechira, maybe a little more accepted than that. But the bottom line is that a heter iska is not an easy thing to do. The basics of a heter iska is as follows. In a heter iska, I'd like to borrow $100,000 from you. And you would like to get 10% back. Yeah, let's say. So a heter iska does as follows. It bifurcates. It splits this into two 50,000s. 50,000 number one is a loan. And for that, at the end of the year, you will have to pay back $50,000. The other 50,000 is an investment. You're going to buy a building. You're going to open a pizza shop. I want a piece of it. I'm going to go in with you. I'm going to be your shutuf. And therefore, being that this is an investment, I could lose money, but any gains, I'm entitled to half of it. Now, you're going to be the guy who's, we have a pizza store, you're the one who's actually rolling the dough and, you know, and putting on the cheese and actually selling things and working behind the counter. I'm a silent partner here. Silent means I don't know how much money you're actually making. So therefore, I would like a fair amount of accountability. At the end of the year, when you say this is your chelek of the profits, I need to know that this, in fact, is the actual amount of profits that were made. So, what I would like is I would like that the pizza store be audited by a Big Four accounting firm, and that audit be reviewed by a major law firm. And after that, I would like you to take a shvua benikitas chefetz, saying that it's true. That's what I want, because I want to be sure that I'm getting it. However, I'll tell you what. there are definitely some numbers out there that if you say them, I'll believe them. If you tell me that the pizza store made $20,000 in the year, that's reasonable. I'll accept that. You don't got to go through anything else to bother. Now, inevitably, the partner will choose to just agree to the amount rather than going through the much more expensive bother of proving. Therefore, if the $100,000 became, after the year, $120,000, then my investment is now worth $60,000. At the end of the year, I will get paid back $110,000, and I will make the 10% that I wanted. That is the way that a heter iska operates. That is the bare bones basic heter iska. Yes?
What's the point of the loan half?
Ah, so the point of the loan half is as follows. Again, there are people that do what's called a kulo pikadon. This is what's called palga nova palga pikadon. Right? The idea of the loan half is as follows, at least partially, is why in the world are you working in the pizza store if I own the whole thing? What are you getting out of this? Somehow or another, the active partner has to be doing something, has to be getting something out of this, and not just the silent partner. Right? Because then if I give you a loan and you pay back the loan, plus you work all year for me, that would be ribbis. Right? So again, this is a very simplified version. In a heter iska, there's also a payment for the managing partner. Right? But this is the basic setup. This is how a heter iska goes. Not everybody has always been so excited about the heter iskas. The problem with heter iskas, among other things, is so again, one day you'll be rabbis and shuls, and you'll have people come up to you and ask you to do a heter iska. It's not usually this simple. So let's go back to a case that we discussed earlier. We discussed the case of a YU student loan. Let's assume that YU would require a heter iska. How would you write it? YU is giving me $5,000 to do what with it?
Pay my rent.
No, they're just keeping the money. it's pretty obvious what it is. I mean, particularly in the case where they're not giving you the cash, right? You have a $5,000 amount owed, and you're just signing on a promissory note. So it's not shaya for me to do anything with the money, because I don't have the money. Right? So then you've got to start getting creative. Well, maybe my education will make me more valuable, and you're entitled to a chelok of my increased marketability. If you believe that, okay. It's a possibility. Right? Or maybe I have to say, I've got $5,000 at home that I was going to use to pay my tuition, but now that I got this loan, that $5,000, I'm opening a pizza store. So that's a possibility, but those are tricky, right? Particularly when there's no money that's transferring hands at all. To say write a heter iska on it, that's what Rashat always said. He said that in terms of if we needed a heter iska, we couldn't get one. But, you know, thankfully, we don't need a heter iska. I think when Rabbi Reese was here, he redid the heter iska. There's a new heter iska, supposedly. I've never seen it. But again, the idea is that, you know, it's assuming that YU is a tzedakah organization, it doesn't even. But to write a heter iska on this would be very, very difficult. The other cases which are difficult as well, and one's a very popular case, and that's called the mortgage. Right? Mortgage, in case anyone's curious, the way it works is as follows. I want to buy a house. The house costs $500,000. I put down a down payment of $400,000. Of $100,000, I'm borrowing $400,000. I'm going to pay it out over 30 years. Right? The rules of a mortgage are very specific. If I sell the house, I got to pay the money right away. Right? The loan is backed by the property. So the bank is going to be very, very careful to make sure they don't lose their major collateral. Right? So they're going to insist that I carry fire insurance. They're going to insist I have flood insurance, right? Because they know if the house burns down tomorrow, I walk away, I lose $100,000. They lose $400,000. Right? So they're very, there's very, and you know, at any point I want to sell that house, etc., it's, they get the money right away, they get the money back. Very much, it's got to go to this, it can't go to anything else. Houses are the type of asset where the value is pretty well known. Right? If I bought a house in 2006, right? Everyone had a pretty good idea by 2009 it wasn't worth what it was in 2006. Less mandapolic. So the question is, does it really make sense in a case like that to say, I want you to bring out the accountants, I want you to bring out the lawyers, I want you to, everybody knows. It's public record. Go on Zillow, Trulia, go on any of the websites. They'll tell you right away that went down. So the whole thing becomes a joke. You know, it's not that we're investing in the house, and, you know, it's going to go up, and you have to tell me, I'm going to tell the bank how much, who knows the value of my house better, me or the bank? So a lot of people have issues with mortgages. Again, Rabbi Levine had a very interesting approach to this. He says as follows. Let's say you're borrowing $400,000 at an interest rate of 5% a year. Okay? So how much money would that be in interest a year? You guys want to pull your fingers together, maybe? Oh, very good. $20,000 a year. Okay? So it's going to be $20,000 a year. But, you know, I can't pay just the interest, right? Or else this is never going to end. Right, we want it to end in 30 years. So how does that work? So let's say, so I'll pay also, besides that, I'm also going to pay another $10,000 in keren. Right? So we'll call this the ribbis, and we'll call this the keren. Now next year, how much money do I owe? $390,000. How much is my ribbis now?
$19,500.
$19,500, thank you. Right? And if I pay $10,000 in the keren, again, right? It's going to go out to 380, it'll be 19, etc. It'll keep on going down. So therefore, my mortgage payments should go down every year. Is that how it works?
No.
No, why not?
Because you pay more of the carrying in the beginning and more of the remittance. I mean, sorry, I'm sorry, the
other way around. Other way around, right?
Yeah, more of the remittance in the beginning.
Right?
The
it's called amortization tables. For those of you who went to SciSims, maybe paid attention. Right? They work this out in a way that your payment's going to be the same every single month for the next 360 months. And at the beginning, so the first year, I'm going to pay $20,000, let's say, plus 10. The next year, I'm going to pay $19,500 plus $10,500. I'm going to pay back more keren the next year, right? And the year afterwards, when I'm down to now, I should be down to a little bit more than that, so that's about $379,500. I'm paying approximately $19,000, and I'm paying $11,000 here. So in the event that someone pays off their, in the event that somebody sells their house in the early years of the mortgage, you'll note that you don't actually own any of the house. You only buy, as it goes on later on, where I owe less and less money, I'm buying more and more keren, and paying less and less ribbis. There. Anyone understand that?
Yeah. Okay.
How about everyone? Okay, good. We're not going to test. Right? So that's the way mortgages naturally work. Right? That I owe a certain amount of money, and under the understanding, I will be going and I will be paying a certain amount of money towards the ribbis. And with that, I will also be paying a certain amount of money towards the keren. And as the years go on, I'm paying less and less ribbis, more and more keren, even though I'm paying the same amount every month. That is a standard mortgage. Rabbi Levine says as follows. He says, so, this is my house. It's a nice house. It has a window and a horse. It's not to me. And, you put that door on you. Go away. So, when I first buy the house, right? So, it's a $500,000 house. I paid $100,000. The bank paid $400,000 for the house, correct? So I own 20% of the house. That's mine. And they own 80% of the house. We'll call that theirs. Yeah? Everyone know which is which? Good. So, who's living in the house?
Yeah.
Me. Whose house am I living in?
The bank's.
Well,
20% my
yard. 20%
yours.
Right. Ours. So, what should I be doing? Because 80% of the house is not mine.
You should be paying them rent, I guess.
I should pay them rent, correct? Mm-hmm. So, I pay them a certain amount of rent. And at the same time, I want to get the house to be mine. So what else would I be doing?
You should be buying part of the house.
I'll be buying part of the house. So if I buy part of the house, right, next year, how much rent do I have to pay?
A little bit less.
A little bit less. Now, if I keep the amounts steady, right, at the beginning, a lot of it will be going towards rent, and a different amount, a smaller amount will be going towards buying up their part. And as time goes on, I will be buying more and more of the house because I have to pay less and less for rent because the bank doesn't own so much of my house anymore. So if I go and I take this, and instead of calling it Ribbis and Karen, I call it Schlirus and Karen, when it comes to this case, I got it. So this is what Rabbi Levine suggests. Any downsides to this?
Well, I mean, yeah, from their point of view, I suppose.
What's the problem from their point of view?
It depends on whether. Well, I guess I'm here to sell it.
Right, what's their concern here? I'll tell you what their concern is. What if someone slips on the ice and cracks their head open? Right? If I own it and I just have a loan, this isn't their problem. If they own 80% of the house, they've got to do 80% of the shoveling, or else they have 80% of the liability.
Yeah.
I mean, in Oz, they have significantly deeper pockets than I do. I imagine they're not going to bother suing me. So, in terms of so even halachically, this is great. Legally, it's tricky. So, you can get around it somewhat through an indemnification agreement. What does indemnification mean? It's a big word.
Even though, right, they would be liable for certain things.
I will cover their liability. The problem is that's not so clear either. Let's say I'm being sued for $50 million. I get a homeless guy to indemnify me. So that's not going to fly. But my pockets are a lot deeper than his pockets. I can't just get off. Take it up with him. So again, identification, you can't just wish it away. As, if you think about it, you'd hope it would be that way. Right, so again, this is a little tricky. But halachically, it definitely would be better than a heteriska, I would think. And if you set up things in this way, this would definitely work. So this is one example of creative ways of getting around the problem. Yes?
Let's just say that the bank you should set up and call it rent as opposed to interest?
Yes.
And banks are
going to be heard. No. Brooklyn has many private mortgage brokers that could definitely talk about it. It's not only banks that give out mortgages. So that would definitely be a possibility of the way it could work. Now, also, again, sometimes there are private loans that are placed. Now, again, mortgages get very, very tricky. So let's say a typical case, right? A yeshiva guy gets married. You know, Baruch Hashem, he's moving wherever he's moving, and then they decide to buy a house. Oh, good, very nice. So he goes to the bank, and he says, I'd like to take out a mortgage, $400,000. They say, what do? He says, I do the most important thing in the world, I learn Torah. Would it be for me, the whole world would collapse, I tell you. He says, beautiful. What do you get paid for that? How do I get paid for that? Oh, Mama. He goes, okay, go enjoy it now. What are you telling us? Get out of here, right? I can't get a loan. But one day, you know, I'll be I'll be rich. So come back to us on that day. Don't worry about it. Go away. Right? So I need to get a loan. So the shver comes up and he says, tell you what we're going to do. I'll take out the loan and you'll pay the loan. So Right? They'll say, you know, Lovan, Lovan the Shverer is, like Yisrael, I take out the loan, you know, and you, Yaakov, David, you go pay it up. Is that okay? What? No. Nope. What would the legal agreement say?
Is there a guarantor?
No, he's taking out the loan. They don't want a guarantor. They want him to take out the loan.
Well, the problem would be, I guess, because he's loaning from the bank and you're loaning from him.
Right. Right. So again, what happens is he borrows $100,000. He has to pay back $110,000, right? He gives the money to me, and I pay off the loan for him. So he gave me $100,000, and I paid off $110,000 debt for him.
Was there a starving who had me?
What?
Was there a starving who had me?
No.
So Derek can actually say, no, I'm not going to pay. Then he's stuck and he has to pay back.
No good answer.
Huh? So you're interested in homelessness, right? But you're living in his house, I remind you. I wouldn't recommend this. Forget, you know, Ebenezer issues. We'll put that aside for now. Even from a partial Chosha Mishmet point of view, it's probably a bad play. as long as we say, well, let's get real about this. So the real thing is he's the landlord in your, on your tochus. So that's not what you want to get involved with. So you got to be very careful, right? Because people think you're doing a favor. Or even a co-signer, that could be a problem. Now, this all comes down to the question of, is the bank Jewish? So the Farish in the protocols of the elders of Zion, that all banks are owned by Jews, Shteitzuch, that goes without saying. But to what extent do we worry about, so that's the big heter, which I'm sure you're all familiar with from this morning's halacha, daily halacha, is the status of corporations. What is the status of corporations? So what is a corporation? A corporation is a legal fiction which provides us with a limited liability. The great United States of America and many other countries want people to start businesses. If I start businesses, that will create jobs, that will create economic activity, they'll get me reelected. These are all very important things. So we invented this thing called a corporation. A corporation means as follows. So I have $50 million in the bank. I could have happily had sold from Yom Kippur. I don't really have to do anything with my time, right? Right? But you want me to open a business with that money. So I say, well, let's see, I'm going to open up a pizza store. Back to the pizza store, right? What's going to happen? Somebody's going to slip in and fall. Now you're going to sue me for my $50 million. So corporation means that, no, they can't sue me. You can't go after my personal assets. It's a limited liability. You can take my pizza store from me. But that's it. No more? That's as much as you can go? So now I'll invest because I know the worst comes to worst. I'm going to lose my investment. I can't lose more than that. So, with a few exceptions where you pierce the corporate veil, that's the general law. So, okay, so I'm going to do this. I'm going to go and I'm going to open a pizza store. What, by the way, what's the cost for it? Why doesn't everyone do this? Double taxation you get it with. The corporation pays taxes, and then you pay taxes on the money you take out of the corporation. And that's the downside to it. There are certain corporations, you know, which limited liability corporations, etc., we can get around it. So the question, so that's what a corporation is. Now, based on that, it's very hard to say. I go and I buy stock in Citibank. So, do I own Citibank? What? So, yeah, I'm a shutuf? Is that what you call it? What? Aha, uh-huh, What? You could vote, absolutely you could vote. That's what it takes. But however, I own stock in McDonald's. Go back to McDonald's. Could I walk in and take a burger? Why not? I've been the ball bus. You don't understand. This is mine. If I was a shutuf, could I do that? Yeah. So, Moses said, it's not really shutfus. I don't really have any. I am entitled, basically, to a percentage of the profits. Right? But even the distribution of dividends, I really have a very little say in this matter. I don't actually own it. So, who owns it? So, that's a major discussion. And it has nafkaminas for ribis, obviously. For chometz on Pesach. Right? Can you own Nabisco on Pesach? You know, an Apple computer on Pesach. Apple computer, I assume, someplace has a cafeteria. And the stomach, they have muffins and rolls in this cafeteria. Right? As far as I know, they don't clean up the Pesach. So how can I be an owner in this? Can I own a mutual fund which has stock in the Bisco on Pesach? Can I have a mutual fund that owns stock in Citibank? V'chule. So what's the story with that? So somehow or another, Rav Moshe is of the opinion, as was mentioned this morning, that if someone, that since there is no Shiban Haguf, meaning that if I borrow the money, you can't come after me for it, right? I own stock in Citibank. Citibank goes under. That's it, the Gomachol. They have $1 billion, they owe $2 billion. So as a shutif, they should be able to go after me for my share of the $1 billion debt. So they're allowed to? No, they have no sheep in a goof. I am protected. I'm behind this great corporate veil. So Moshe seems to think that if there is no Shibud HaGuf, there's not really such a loan. But he only says it one way. It's a little confusing. He says that I can take money from a corporation, Ribis, but I can't give money to a corporation. Which means as follows. I can put my money in the bank. I can get interest. I can open a CD. I can do that. But I can't pay them Ribis, which means that I have to pay my credit card on time. And two, we're going to have a real hard time with a mortgage. Because the heter does not apply there. And some people don't even like that heter. Right, the Minchas Yitzchak, did we quote him this morning? We quoted someone else. So he disagrees with this. So that's also a major discussion, both in practical, to the extent that you're going to use a bank or something like that, give you a mortgage. And I guess we're running out of time. I'll just mention that Rav Shechter tells a story that his father-in-law wanted to be makbid on this. He didn't want to rely on the heterim of taking out a mortgage. When he bought his house, he took an interest-free loan from his talmidim. I'd like to make clear, if I want to buy a house, I'd like an interest-free loan from my talmidim as well. There's many, halacha is not the only reason why you'd want an interest-free loan from your talmidim, I imagine. Right, so these are the issues. So again, ribis is very tricky. Particularly if you're getting involved in the nitty-gritty of heter iskas, etc., you got to be very careful with this. So much like most people probably wouldn't try writing a get on their own, if they didn't have years of training, you probably shouldn't try to do ribis on your own either. It isn't practical day-to-day life. It's just something to keep your eyes open for. Baruch Hashem, we live in a country that there are many goyim. To quote Rabbi Tendler, we've been blessed. Therefore, in your day-to-day, assuming you make a lot on the case of the corporations, that you at least to accept ribis would not be as problematic. But still, you have to be careful, particularly when it comes to paying ribis. The heter of corporations becomes a lot weaker then. All right. Thank you very much. Yes. Give me a moment.